so excited to have my dear friend Patty here on the podcast today to talk about a really deep and important topic that requires a lot of presence and depth. So before we dive in, let's take a moment to just come into a place of stillness in the body. So wherever you are, just find a tall spine. If you're lying down, that's okay. Just feel that maybe you sense more spaciousness in the central column of your body. If it feels right for you, perhaps close down the eyes. Soften the jaw and start to deepen the breath. Wherever you are, can you sense the grounded force of Mother Earth underneath you, below you? And feel that not only is your body sitting, lying, standing against her, not only is the weight of your physical form resting on the earth, but she is also actively pressing up and into you. And this gives you a sense of connectedness. This brings you into the here and the now. Slowly guide the left hand to the center of the chest, the heart. Then allow the right palm to cradle the sacred space just below the navel. And if you don't feel like touching your body this evening, morning, whatever time it is for you, that's okay. Always know that you can hover your hands above these two powerful places. We're going to take three deep breaths together. Each exhale is an audible sigh out of the mouth. So with every exhale, you're just letting go of expectations, coming into the here and the now. Start together, big inhale through the nose. Open the mouth, exhale. Two more times, inhale. Exhale. Last time, whatever sound you need to make, big inhale, exhale. And then as you're ready, you can slowly peel the hands away from the womb, the heart, bring them to the lap or the knees. And keep the eyes open or closed, your choice, but just find a place in your body where you can remain in stillness with a sense of comfort and ease. So you are setting a subtle yet powerful intention for the remainder of this podcast to be so present with all of the amazing wisdom, information, and practical tools that my dear friend Patty will be transmitting to you in this time together. Okay. Hi, Patty.
Hello, dear Usha.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm so excited to be here in Rishikesh with you. It's such an honor and so profound to be doing this podcast and talking about this such important topic of grief and around miscarriage and abortion and loss. So thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of this conversation.
I'm so grateful that you're here. And I'm glad that you've mentioned that we are in India. So if you hear any sounds of construction, if you hear any horns, any cows, any small children, just please understand that we are in India recording this podcast, but we'll do our best to silence the background noise. So Patty, I've been a fan of your work for so long, and I'm always so deeply moved when we get to share space together, and I'd love it if you share a little bit more about the work that you do in the world, and also what brought you to that work.
Thank you, Usha. Well, I'm a grief counselor, a death doula, and I'm a dying consciously teacher. So basically what I do is talk about death and grief and support people that are going through it, families that are grieving after losing a loved one, and just teach and share as much as I can different easy practical tools so that we can bring death back into life, which is so necessary.
Bring death back into life. I love that, especially because it's such an area of our society and our world. I mean, depending on where you come from, but in a lot of colonial patriarchal places, death has really been shamed or forgotten or put, you know, behind a curtain.
Yes.
So this is a really unusual area of work. So how did you arrive to this place?
Well, I was fascinated with death from an early age and saw many different aspects of it, always wanting to bring the conversation into everyday life. And I noticed from an early age that everyone was uncomfortable talking about death. And I remember being in a picnic when I lived in Costa Rica. I was 14 and we were having a picnic in the mountains, and there was a family next to our picnic table, and there was a man probably around 60 years old who had a heart attack. And when the paramedics came and they gave him the adrenaline shot and he passed, I remember they left the vessel you say?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like on the floor, and I picked it up, and I kept it for the longest time because it was just such a reminder of how every moment of our lives is so precious, and that we just really don't know when our last moment is and how important it is to have like death so present in our lives, so that we are reminded of how important it is just to embrace as part of our daily lives that death is all around us and is happening constantly in our lives. Because if we cannot bring the conversation back into our daily lives, it is very hard to make space for kind of like embracing all of what goes on in the world. It's just really, really, really important. And it's something that we have to prepare for constantly. It's a practice. It's a skill. Grief is such an important skill to remember. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who is probably the mother of thanatology, which is the study of death, amazing Swiss doctor, and she mentions that after World War II, in the West, what happened was we kind of like didn't want to be around death. It just became like such a sterile subject. So in hospitals, dying patients were put in the back where we couldn't see it. And in the Western, it's always a culture about being young and being healthy. And somehow, if we're ill, or if we're dying, or if we're aging, it's something to be ashamed about. It's not something that wants to be put out in the open and have this conversation. There's just like so many subjects that we are uncomfortable with that we can't sit and recognize them and make space for them. And so dying and grief is one of them. And we've forgotten what it's like to have someone at home dying and taking care of them and being a doula for them and holding space for them in such a sacred way. And also before, when we lived in communities where there was farming, we were also around animals that died as a natural part of life, and we just don't see that anymore. So it's hard to relate to it because we don't even know we don't remember what it looks like.
Yeah, it's so profound. I mean, I just resonate so deeply with what you shared. I remember, you know, studying Eastern teachings, and in the yogic path, they talk about one of the kleshas, or this sheath or illusion that keeps us from seeing, these aversions that keep us from fully living in our truth. One of them is fear of death.
Yes.
And this fear of death plagues us, and it keeps us from actually living. And then in the Buddhist tradition, one of the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism is the idea of a precious human life. And it's that your life is precious, and one day you're going to die. And to be fully integrated in your life, to be fully integrated in your spiritual path, you need to hold that reality that you are going to die close to your heart so that you can actually live.
Exactly.
Which seems to be like such a paradox, right? Yes. But no, we need to remember that we're going to die in order to actually show up and live. And I love how you talk about that holding death actually creates more space for life. And I think the people I know who have touched that depth of suffering in themselves, and also who have been around the immense cycles of nature, whether it's death in their own family or death with animals or in nature with plants, they show up in a different way.
Yes.
Things don't faze them as much because they know that this too shall end, this too
yes.
shall pass, and it allows them to just rest in so much more presence. So I love that you're doing this work. I think it's so important that we confront these areas of ourselves and of society that we're really uncomfortable with, and death is one of them.
Yes. Yes, grieving is so much more powerful than, for example, sadness.
Mm-hmm.
Sadness is it's a beautiful emotion that helps us, it creates space and gives us power and strength
mm-hmm.
to the letting go of something.
Mm-hmm.
The difference with grief is so many emotions at the same time coming together. That's what makes it so powerful and why it's so important to practice this skill that has been lost. Because we have to be in our bodies to be able to live this experience. Hold on to everything that arises, the sadness, the end that was kind of like taken from under us without us being able to have any decision onto whether it was happening or not. It's just something that happens in life, and we have to surrender. It's like the greatest surrendering to it. So in the grieving, it's part of like a practice of that letting go for when that moment comes, very unexpectedly most of the time in our lives, unless there's like an illness, something that prepares us for it. But most of the time we don't have time to prepare, and sometimes sometimes our faith or our intellect tend to want to skip this process of being grounded in the body and going through all of these emotions that come up. So sadness is about moving forward after some, it's like, okay, this, you know, this feels uncomfortable, and now let's move through this to help us prepare for the future. As where grief is this place where we just have to sit and make a container for everything that's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
From like the memories of that person that we loved, the anger that comes with that loss, the sadness, sometimes even, you know, just like the loving memories, and sometimes even the laughter. But there are many different levels to it, and it's important to be able to learn how we experience it in our body so that we can hold space for another person that's lost something and not want to fix it. We live in a culture that wants to fix everything, don't we?
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah. And so just being able to hold that space for ourselves is a skill that when we've created that space inside of us and allow the pain, the anger, the sadness, the fear, everything that arises with grief, we are able to hold space for another person. And in many old traditions, they say that if you cannot make space and hold death for those who have gone, you cannot hold space for life for those new who are coming. So it's very important to have those two sides. It's like living is what happens between birth and death.
Mm.
These two very important portals that happen when we come into this realm and when we leave this realm. And so our faith, in a way, can also kind of make us want to bypass that physical grounded experience of what it feels like in the body to deal with that loss, as does our intellect. It's over. Okay, under the ground, there's
it's
nothing
gone,
more. It's
anyway.
All gone.
It's love
so
and
it's
light.
Like, yeah, let's just like open the closet, you know, just take out the clothes and get rid of everything. And I will not look at the albums. I will not look at the memories. I will not, because it's over. It's done. There's nothing I can do about it.
Mm.
And it's so frightening to go into what I'm feeling around that, that I just want to hurry and move on.
Mm.
And what happens is we tend to create these physical, energetic blocks in our body when we don't allow ourselves to go through the grief in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
In the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, also when there's trauma, our body protects us because we're not ready to go into the grief in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not safe, maybe. For us. So also there's that aspect of it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just in general, society doesn't necessarily create a space for us to grieve, right? It's like if you're grieving, you still go to work, you still show up for your partnership, you still show up for your responsibilities. It's like, what does it look like to grieve in our modern world? And how do we create space for that? And
exactly.
I think what we're talking about today with miscarriage and abortion, this is even a deeper level of it, because this is grieving, which is already something that many of us have to fight for the space to experience, that container. I love what you said, the container of grief. But in these areas like miscarriage or abortion, where there's already so much shame or there's such a lack of support, how do we find a way to grieve healthily or call in the support that we need for these experiences of miscarriage and of abortion?
That's huge, huge. We definitely don't know how to do this. And a lot of the times, it's a conversation that doesn't want to, you know, a lot of people find difficult to even acknowledge. They want to respect your privacy, maybe, right? So they don't know if the appropriate thing is to say even the word, I'm sorry for your loss.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry that your baby died.
Mm-hmm.
So we tend to, as a society, say something like, you know, there's a bigger purpose that maybe we don't understand right now why it happened. Or we tend to say something like, maybe it was for the best.
Mm.
Things that kind of avoid.
We try to bypass it.
We
again.
Try to bypass
yeah.
it again. So, again, if we haven't learned how to kind of build these skills within us, it's really hard to hold someone else that
mm-hmm.
is going through it, and it's really hard as well to just be able to say how we're feeling, which, you know, it's like, where's the balance of going through, you know, you're not going to go through the day, the grocery, maybe you're feeling still physically still in pain or weak, besides all of the emotional things that are coming up and all the hormonal things that are happening in your body. And it's like, you're not going to go to the grocery and how's your day today and get into it. So it's like choosing who you want to share this with, share this experience with, how open you are to letting your community, your support, your tribe in and express what you need. It's like we're so used to we don't really express our needs. We kind of like are waiting for other people to know exactly what to do. So I think expressing what we need from our close community is something that's really important. For example, if you need to rest, and asking someone close by to maybe bring food for you, or if you have small children and you need space to like rest your body or space to grieve, asking your partner to maybe take, or a friend or a family member to take the kids for a while so that you can grieve with your partner or alone, and just journaling and crying and having tea and making space to rest, and aromatherapy and maybe going for a massage or looking for support from a doula, a birth doula or a death doula, a grief counselor. Sometimes you might even need support from a psychiatrist, depending on the circumstances around the loss. Sometimes there is need for taking some medication because of the hormones that are coming, are out of sync, or homeopath, or there's just so many ways to go around it. But the important thing is to acknowledge what we need and really be able to sit with it.
I think that first part of acknowledging it is like, can we honor that this is something that actually needs your attention, you know? Yes. And when so many of us, I remember when I was much younger, people would ask me like, what are your needs? I had no idea what my needs were. When someone would ask me that, it was like, what? Like, it wasn't even in the forefront of my mind. And that question often froze me because I wasn't thinking about what I needed. I was only thinking about what everyone else needed. So for mothers to find that in themselves, especially in a moment of intense grief, I understand why you talk about grief being a skill, because we need to build that skill right now, not when we actually need to grieve. Sure. Throw us into the fire, right? Sometimes we get initiated by fire, but what if we actually took the time to build that skill now? Because definitely, with all of the loss and the death there is in life in general, we're going to need it at some point.
Most definitely.
Right? And I remember living here in the ashram, I was teaching a training here a few months ago, and there was a mother cat. I think you met her today.
Yes, yeah. I did.
And she lost 7 of her kittens. They were slain by another cat who came in. And I remember for about a month, she just cried so loudly. Doesn't matter if we were in silence, doing a ceremony. She cried for a month through all of the halls of the ashram and just grieved the loss of her children. And I was so moved by that, thinking about all of the women I supported in postpartum, from with miscarriage, with abortion as well, and just postpartum. It's like this grief, this loss of what was, of who you once were, or of the baby, you know. And so few of us give ourselves permission to actually feel what is needed. And so to give ourselves first, as you were saying, that permission, and then to call in the support. It's
yes.
Like, it's a two-part transformation that needs to happen. We need to change the dialogue internally about what grief is. And then we also need to do it on a larger scale so that our families, our partners, our friends, all of our loved ones know that, okay, this is important. I need to show up for this. This is a part of life that they
yes.
are moving through. And so how can I show up for them with food, with quality time, with whatever? I think it's personal.
Space.
Exactly.
Usha, you and your classes, which I love, like in all of your teachings, you do a wonderful exercise that I think is transformational for many women who have never, or any person for that matter, who has never like actually been able to hold space for another. And it's, you have one of the person sharing, like, tell whatever, say whatever they want without the other person giving advice, without them having, saying anything, without them affirming with their head or nodding with their head or wanting to take over their story and make them feel better about it. And what that feels like. Can I hold space for another person without having to give my feedback or an answer or make everything better for them? So just that practice, I think it's education of so many things that as societies don't work for us anymore, and having the space to rest as well, because after your body goes through such a big trauma, you need space to recover. You need time and like to rest and space to recover. And oftentimes, after a miscarriage, if you have other children or you have a demanding job, you go right back to your routine. And with abortion, even more so, because there's so much shame around it, and it's something that we just don't talk about. So it's a lot of the times you just have to go back to life, whatever routine you're in, immediately almost, because there's just no shame. There's so much shame in saying what's going on with your personal life, or not even, because, again, Brené Brown says beautifully, I can't remember in which of her books, she talks about who we give, you know, who has the right in our lives, who we treasure in our lives and know that is going to hold that space for us with integrity. So also, it's knowing who to share with. A lot of the times it's not, we become also, in our culture has become that we have to talk about everything. It's like, I'm coming out with
Instagram,
my story.
I'm posting it everywhere.
Everywhere, because I need my story to be heard. And a lot of the times it's who can hold it with integrity. Who do I give permission to hold my story and be my witness with integrity, with love, with support? And that's also part of taking care of myself. So it's like, I don't need to come out and share it with the world because I want to be free of the story, or I'm not ashamed, I want to get rid of shame. No, it's also holding that loving space for oneself and knowing who I want to share this with.
That's so beautiful. And I think it takes a lot of emotional intelligence to be able to hold ourselves and then also choose who can hold me, you know? And I think one of the greatest aspects of moving through miscarriage and abortion as well, which we'll talk about more in depth in a moment, but is just granting yourself that space to be held and recognizing this is something important in my life that I'm moving through. And it's really interesting when I support my doula clients, a lot of them, or as a childbirth educator, or just students in general from trainings, they say things like, oh, I'm not sure if I want to splurge on a doula, or if I can splurge on a counselor, or splurge on support. And I have to calm myself down a little bit there, because I really feel like it's not a splurge, it's a need. And it's absolutely necessary that you do whatever you can to get that support now, because if not, it's going to come up much later. It's not like we just stuff down our grief or our sadness and it doesn't come out at some point, right? Or create some type of energetic block or constriction or develop into some type of dis-ease. And so it's really important that we address it in that moment. And also, if you're listening and you've experienced a miscarriage or you've experienced an abortion or some loss that you haven't processed yet, I'm a big believer, and maybe you are too, Patty, that it's never too late.
Definitely.
To grieve.
Never, ever too late. And just some, you know, sometimes just by hearing this, or all of a sudden you're watching a movie and you just can't stop crying, or you see the, you know, a pet die, and just like this unexpected, overwhelming grief happens in your life, and you feel like it's kind of like out of proportion. It can definitely be group, you know, an older grief or a bigger grief or a bigger story being carried in, now it's a safe time. Now it's, my body is ready. Yeah. Like somehow this is ready to be released because now I feel safe.
Yeah. And I get that a lot, you know, with students, and also I've experienced that myself, where it's like you watch a movie, the tears start to flow, and all of a sudden you're just mourning everything. Yes. You're just crying for everything.
For the world, right?
Exactly. And you're just allowing it, okay, now it's socially acceptable, right, for me to grieve, and so I'm just going to go for it, and I'm going to grieve it all. But I feel that with a lot of people, that we just, once we allow ourselves to grieve, so much arises, which is really just a symbol of how much we've been pushing down.
Yes.
to get through our day-to-day life, where we have to say, how are you? I'm good, thanks.
Yeah.
How are you? Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's a great quote I'd like to share with you. Glennon Doyle talks about grief, and she says, grief is love's souvenir. Mm. It is our proof that we once loved. Grief is the receipt we wave in the air that says to the world, look, love was once mine. I loved well. Here is my proof that I paid the price.
Mm.
And it's just allowing that. Mm. Making space for all that was once ours to just come up in whatever way needs to be expressed so it can be released and transformed.
Mm.
And at the same time, it stays with us. It stays with us forever in a different way.
Mm.
It's like I don't have to get rid of it.
Mm.
It's like once it comes up, it doesn't mean that it's done, that it's over, that it's never going to come up again. My mother passed away of ovarian cancer 12 years ago, and I was her primary caregiver for a year. And it was such a profound transformational experience. I got to do a lot of family work and around her passing, and to be able to just clear layers and layers and layers of it. And even though I did all of that work, and even though like seeing her suffer was part of almost a relief when she finally passed, it doesn't mean that I don't miss her in many unexpected moments of my life. It just kind of like sneaks up on me. And it can be a beautiful moment that I'm going through, or it can be a painful moment that I'm going through. Whatever it is, it kind of like, I never know when it's going to show up. And being able to welcome it and cry with it, sit with it, whatever comes up again, it's part of that container that becomes more and more available to hold space for whatever it is that comes up in life.
So beautiful. I just got totally enveloped in your share. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm really curious as to how, you know, we can navigate things like abortion in times where we're feeling such grief. And I think one of the things I've noticed as a postpartum doula is that first, just acknowledging that when you're in abortion, when you have an abortion, you are in a postpartum state. So your body is changing so much, not only just physically or emotionally, but hormonally. You know, there's so many changes that go on in your endocrine system. And a lot of times, because there's so much shame or lack of support around abortion, we can negate the symptoms of grief that arise and try really hard to just, you know, keep on keeping on pushing ourselves into the way of life that was before. And I think that's one of the things I've learned the most supporting women is just, you know, there is no closing the door on that story. There is no going back to who you were before that assault. There is no going back to who you were before that miscarriage, who you were before that abortion. A lot of times we contract away from that experience of pain so much that we think healing means to close the door on it, when really it means to integrate it into your story, to honor it as something you've experienced instead of trying to arrive at that place that you were before it happened.
Yes. And there's a wonderful author and authority on this subject. Her name is Carla McLaren, and she is the writer of a book, The Language of Emotions, which is a masterpiece on how to hold each emotion and what they teach us. Mm-hmm. And basically, it what she teaches us to hold space for all of this, and she says that when we go through something in such, and we're able to honor it and we're able to give it space and embody it, we become like these elders to that tribe. Mm. So that we can hold space for others that might go through it in the future and be able to show them the way.
Mm.
And I find that absolutely beautiful. Mm. It's how that experience, when I choose, you know, no matter how painful, how difficult it is, I choose to hold it with integrity and make room for it in my life, I can later turn that into medicine to help others
mm.
go through whatever it is they're going through at the same time.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's so beautiful. I think, you know, one of my teachers talks about our shadow brings us to our purpose, brings us to our path. And yet so many of us contract away from it because we're obsessed with this idea of spirituality being love and light, and anything that has pain, we go around it instead of going through it. And when we really go through it, we can find, oh wow, this has a deep meaning for me here. There's treasure on the other side, right? And I think, I mean, my own experience of my birth being traumatic brought me to the world of birth. And for so long, I contracted away from it. No, I don't want to look at it. I don't want to look at it. And then once I looked at it face to face, my life path just laid out in front of me. And so there's so much wisdom in our ability to touch the depth of our soul. And it's a very tantric perspective even to see everything as holy, you know, to see the pain and the joy, to be able to hold them and to see that really they're one and the same. They're just offering you a different fragrance, a different flavor of life.
Oh yes, most totally. Yes,
yes, very important.
Yes, very, very important. And I can't remember the name of the Dr. Kenneth Doka, who has a book called Grief is a Journey, talks about disenfranchised grief.
Mm.
And disenfranchised grief is all of the griefs that in society we are shamed in not sharing. For example, going through divorce, sexual abuse, abortion, all of these losses that we don't have permission to mourn and talk about out loud, because there's so much shame around them. A lot of the times we feel we brought it on to ourselves.
Yeah, we've done something wrong. We've been bad, and because of that, this is happening to us, right?
Yes, and so sometimes, you know, I remember when my mother passed away, I was so supported through my friends, my community, my family. And 6 months later, I got a divorce out of a 17-year marriage, 20-year relationship. And I was not supported and held in the same way because it was my choice.
Mm.
So if it was my choice, you know, it's like,
shouldn't you be happy about it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, I felt it was time to let go, but at the same time, it was so painful. Two children, 20 years of a relationship, you know, it's just like, it didn't, you know, it was time for it to end. But in society, when you make those choices, there's no room for the grievance that goes around that incident. Mm. It's really interesting.
Yeah. I love how you bring that up. And I think it's, you know, just looking at the patriarchy and its connection with the church or Judeo-Christian beliefs, it's like we learn that if we do something bad, punishment comes.
Exactly.
And so in the areas like sexual assault or abortion, or divorce even, if we've done something quote-unquote wrong, well, you know, this grief, this is just you getting what you made your bed, now lay in it, right?
Exactly.
And I think it's so important that we peel back the layers on this, this really like unconscious belief that we deserve punishment in some way, or that the universe is punishing us. And I know that growing up in a Catholic home and also working with a lot of women who deal with so much grief and guilt and shame after they choose to have an abortion for whatever reason, I really notice how religious programming comes up, right? Even though I stopped going to church when I was 11 because I didn't believe in what was being preached, I still have those beliefs inside of me. And even if we didn't grow up in a religious home, sometimes those beliefs of punishment can really infuse themselves into our psyche. And sometimes we don't know it until a great challenge arises, like something that brings about a lot of grief. So I find it really interesting that we can almost use these moments of grief as a portal to peel back the veil on all of the layers of conditioning that we have and to see, okay, what program am I running here,
yes,
right? What am I subscribing to? And
yes,
it's very fascinating,
yes,
when we start to look at it. Disenfranchised grief, I really love that.
Yes, yes. So important to be able to make room for it in the conversation as well. A big part of it, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So we've spoken a lot about grief, sadness, why it's important to really hone that skill of grief and create that container for loss, for mourning. But can you offer some tangible, real practices that those who are experiencing loss or experiencing grief, specifically miscarriage, abortion, what are some practices or tools that they can use to help move through and hold themselves in their experience of loss?
Most definitely. So as we spoke about earlier, about making space for journaling, resting, crying, maybe, you know, sometimes just in the bathtub a lot of the times feels great, or taking a shower with hot water and just being able to cry those cleansing tears, drinking plenty of teas, and maybe like asking support from a friend or a counselor to hold that space for us, someone, remembering that to look for someone that we totally trust can hold that space and integrity for us, resting our body, getting a massage, being embodied. Like massage touch helps us bring us back to our body.
And to
which
move
a lot
the
of
hormones
it,
out
yes,
of the tissues. It's
yes,
so important.
You and I were talking before we started this, when the hormones, like the pregnancy hormones, start leaving the body. So a lot of doulas say that the third week is the hardest after the miscarriage or the abortion or postpartum. So being aware of that.
Absolutely.
Also being aware of preparing in a way, creating some kind of ritual before the induction mm-hmm. of the miscarriage. Honoring that baby, maybe giving it a name. If we have other children, to include them as well, because they're also going through grief. Mm-hmm. And creating a safe container where maybe we plant a tree together, or we do some kind of ritual that as a family helps us, or maybe the children write a letter to the baby.
Oh, so beautiful.
Any way we create a circle where our family can maybe start saying words and offering flowers, seeds, different things to do a little bundle mm. for that for that child that didn't make it into this world, and just letting the tears come out and sharing the experience, and making sure that everyone is held, asking for help, mm-hmm. asking for our community to hold us, making sure also that our partner has a space where they can as well feel supported. Because a lot of the times what I see is the mother feels like she's the only one who's going through it,
mm-hmm.
like it's hers, like it's she's the only one who had this loss. And a lot of the times our partners and our children also mm-hmm. are going through it in a different way. And so it's important that everyone receives a secure, loving space where they can all go through it. And I love something I'd love to share with all of you, something that Elizabeth Gilbert says about this. And
great
she says,
resources
yeah.
today.
She says, we do spiritual ceremonies as human beings in order to create a safe resting place for our most complicated feelings of joy or trauma, so that we don't have to haul those feelings around with us forever, weighing us down.
Mm-hmm.
We all need such places of ritual safekeeping. And I do believe that if your culture or tradition doesn't have the specific ritual you are craving, then you are absolutely permitted to make a ceremony of your own devising, fixing your own broken down emotional systems with all the do-it-yourself resourcefulness of a generous plumber poet. I love that.
It's beautiful.
I love that. And there's an amazing book, another resource, that's called Sacred Dying, and it's by Megory Anderson. And a lot of great rituals in there to go through a loss. And just taking the time, don't rush through it. Make the space, take the time to be able, whatever time you need. And if it's taking like over several months to process, look for help, reach out, go to a counselor, reach a doula, find a professional that really accompanies you through this time and this period, so that you can explore what's going on a deeper level, and you can get all the support you need through this very difficult time.
Mm-hmm.
And to all of those mothers and families and partners, everyone out there who has felt alone and confused, and that they haven't been able to express the pain and anguish going through a loss like this, know that we hold you with so much love. You're not alone. Reach out. Reach out. Really reach out.
It is so beautiful, Patty. And what kept on moving through me as you were speaking is to just let everyone know that you deserve the space to grieve.
Yes.
And I think, you know, we talk about tools, and it's like we cry, we journal, and yet so many of us don't allow ourselves to do that because we don't think it's something big enough to stop everything for. And it's like, you are worthy to take that space. You deserve it. It is your birthright. And there's no time stamp on your healing. Like, get the support you need, and then know that there's no time stamp. There's no timeline. Oh, you should be through that. And I think, you know, working through trauma that's happened to me in my life, it's like sometimes it still comes up, and I'm like, God, shouldn't I be through that already?
Yes.
And
thank
there's so
you for
many layers.
That. Thank you for saying that. That is another very big misconception. Definitely. It's like we think that once we've worked through something, the feeling shouldn't arise again. And as I mentioned earlier, it's something that stays with you forever, for life, you know, in different ways. And it doesn't mean that because it arises again in a different way from a total different experience and it brings that up again, it doesn't mean that we didn't do our job.
Mm.
Right.
You're still doing the work.
we're still doing the work. Because as long as we are in a human body,
we're still doing the work.
We're still doing the work.
Most
sometimes
definitely.
I'm like,
God, isn't the work over yet? But no, we're still here.
Yes.
So, but what amazing tools that you've just provided so that people know that, you know, they're supported. And I was so excited to record this with you, Patty, because I think that this is an area where there is such an intense lack of support. We're so afraid to talk about it that there's really barely any resources for it. And a lot of times what feels like it should be an open channel of communication, and often feels like it's a hushed voices. You know, I've had women come up to me before in cafes, like, could you help me with my, in whispers, like, miscarriage. And it's like, wow, can we just talk about this openly? And that's an intention and a hope that I have for all the listeners, is that you give yourself permission to speak about it to those who you hold sacred, as you spoke about, Patty. But I think, you know, again, you deserve that space.
Most
definitely. You deserve that space.
And know that you didn't do anything wrong. Mm. A lot of women think, but I was eating healthy, you know, or I went to a yoga class and maybe I did this on,
maybe,
you know,
I thought a bad thought, and, you know, yeah.
Exactly. So
the ways we blame ourselves.
Yes. That's another huge part of all of it. And know that there is nothing we can do right or wrong to preventing whatever has to happen with life happening. There's no guarantees of anything except for that we are going to die. Mm-hmm. And we unfortunately have this misconception that death is supposed to happen when we're 80-something years old. Mm-hmm. That before that is a punishment of some kind. And death has no age. It doesn't, there's nothing we can do to avoid it. It's inevitable. It's part of life.
And if we embrace it, then we live more presently,
yes,
more fully in the now.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Patty. And you are just such an amazing teacher and support. So I want to be sure that for all those of you who are moving through miscarriage, who are moving through abortion, I don't offer one-on-ones anymore, so Patty is my go-to resource for everyone who reaches out for me. And for those of you who feel called to learn how to support people in sacred transitions, I know you have a training called Dying Consciously. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. I'm a teacher for an organization that's called dyingconsciously.org. And I give weekend workshops on exploring ways of sacred dying and preparing for it, and the questions around us and the rituals to help us transition in a supported, loving way. Mm-hmm. So you can visit my website, www.pattybueno.com. Or you can inbox me there, and I will get back to you with more information, whatever you need. Thank you so much, Usha, for taking the time to do this podcast with me and your beautiful, amazing work that you do in the world. I am your number one fan. I love what you do, and I'm just so honored to be able to share this space with you here right now.
Thank you so much, Patty, and I'm so grateful because I want people to be able to connect with you, because I think your work is so needed. And so for our listeners, we have Patty's website listed down below, and then we also have all the resources that she listed and a little bit more about her workshops and her offerings. So if you want to reach out to her, please, please do. Remember, as we already spoke about, I'm just going to say it again, you deserve the support that you need. You deserve it.
Oh, yes.
Thank you so much, Patty. I'm so grateful to have had this conversation with you.
Thank you. I love you, Usha.
I love you too. Okay, we're signing off from India. If you heard any cows, cars, or in India, in the Himalaya. So I hope you have a beautiful rest of your week, and consider coming back to this podcast again, or even sending it to friends, family, those who are moving through loss. Our hope is that it's a really supportive resource for you to move through this time in your life and to help others do the same. Okay, thank you all so much for tuning in, and that is all.